Hello, everyone. As you no doubt gleaned from the episode title, this is not a full-length episode of the Nietzsche podcast, but merely an announcement. But it's a very important one. Something very big is happening in my life, and it is related to the podcast in its way. I've written a book, and it's going to be published by Black Rose Writing. They're a publisher here in Texas, releasing my first ever work in the written word, my first published work in the written word, in May of this year, May of 2024. I've talked about this on a couple other podcasts, both my own, I think I mentioned it near the end of an episode or two, and on other shows I've been invited on to. I've told the patrons, and I made an announcement on the YouTube page and on my blog, but I thought I'd publish an announcement here on the podcast feed. And I thought I'd give you a background explanation of the work, what it is, why I wrote it, and most importantly, why you should buy it and pre-order it when it becomes available. The book is called The Ritual Madness of Rock and Roll, and I started writing it in earnest in the year 2020. I say in earnest because technically I started writing it before that. The initial drafts drew heavily on my notebook that I kept while I was on tour with my band in Western Europe. In terms of the autobiographical aspect of the book, this is a novel about that tour. It's a nonfiction novel, an autobiographical novel, Destroyer of Light's European tour, which took place in 2019. But the book is not just autobiographical. The book also has a philosophical aspect, and it's about half and half philosophy and autobiography. The subtitle of the work is An Inquiry on Aesthetics, and this book contains my theory of art. Now, I don't claim to have found a new approach to the questions of aesthetics. I draw heavily on the work of Leo Tolstoy, on Socrates, on Nietzsche, on Ernst Cassirer, many others. And I should clarify that this is not a strictly Nietzschean theory of art. Nietzsche is just one of many influences. And I came to some very different conclusions regarding art than Nietzsche did. I also criticize Nietzsche to some extent in the later chapters of the book regarding his conception of the will to power as it relates to things like art and human creativity. As Montaigne says, the bees pollinate here and there, but what they gather is no longer thyme or marjoram, but their own honey. And I would like to think that this is what I've done here. I've mainly sought out sources among artists and philosophers who have helped me through their words or through their past research or through their ideas or through their artwork to give birth to a viewpoint that is wholly my own as regarding art and creativity. My approach to this question is not really involved with the project of deciding what is beautiful, which one might say is the definitive question of aesthetics, just as the definitive question of ethics is what is good. Perhaps the definitive question for epistemology is the question, I think famously raised by Pontius Pilate, what is truth? Perhaps the most Nietzschean thing about this philosophical endeavor of mine is that I did not strive to build on Nietzsche's ideas so much as the fact that I followed Nietzsche in taking a more psychological approach. That is to say, my starting questions were more along the lines of, why do we make art? What are we doing when we're creating art? Why is art valuable? These are the real conscience questions of the intellect that I had to pose to myself. And we go beyond psychology. We go into anthropology, world history, religion. It ends up being a very far-reaching book in its scope. Perhaps the thing that I have to offer with this book that you might not find easily elsewhere is that I pose these questions to myself as an artist. I found myself asking these questions while engaged with doing art and questioning why I was doing it. This wasn't just an abstract series of concerns for me. It was something that applied directly to my own life and could have a huge impact on my life depending on how I answered. So I don't know why, but for some reason, it was important for me from the very start to situate this inquiry, this philosophical inquiry, within the autobiographical, to make it philosophical and narrative at the same time. And I endeavored to basically give a very involved, detailed account of what it was like to go on tour in an underground doom metal band in Europe. That was our first time ever in Europe. And to give an account of what the day-to-day life looks like. And it is at times a brutally honest account of what happened on that tour. And I also endeavored not to embellish the actions or characters of the people involved. I thought a lot about Robert Persig and what he says in Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, with, for example, the characters of John and Sylvia, his friends that come along on the motorcycle trip, and he says, I don't want to make Sylvia into some character, she's just Sylvia. So I tried to let everyone just be who they are, so to speak, and not turn real people into a plot point or a character type or something of that nature. The only story arc that I allowed myself was confined to the events that actually happened, however climactic or anticlimactic, however ordinary or extraordinary. And in some ways, that's me breaking the rules to some extent, because I believe it's a saying when you're writing autobiographically that the worst reason to include something in the story is because it actually happened. But, you know, with the genre of autofiction and some authors such as Nosegard, who have sort of pioneered this or brought this into popularity in recent years, you know, I felt the trail had been blazed for me to write a story like this, and it just felt right for that to be the story. And I think what came out narratively is actually quite entertaining. I wasn't initially sure of this, but the people who I had edited all said they didn't expect the narrative or the autobiographical parts to be so engaging to them. They were just interested in the philosophical bits, and yet the narrative parts were very engaging. So hopefully all of you will find that as well. I wanted it to be like you were really there with me. And I had a sort of desire also to recreate the style of travelogues that used to be popular among writers in Europe. And I think that literary tradition is maybe why it felt right for my first ever book to be about a tour that happened in Europe. Even though I've written about many tours over the years, I've had tour blogs and I've written manuscripts that are, you know, they're not edited or polished and definitely not publishable, but about sort of recounting memoirs of past tours. And I've had way more experience touring in America. I mean, I did it for 7 years before we went on this tour. So why write about the European tour? But I owe so much to the philosophical tradition of Europe, and it feels right that the ideas contained in this book ought to be situated there. They're sort of given a place by being nested in this autobiographical narrative. I started writing this book during the year 2020 because, as I've recounted before, the pandemic happened. Our tours got canceled. Suddenly, I wasn't a musician anymore because what we are is what we do. And as far as the present moment at that time, I simply wasn't out there being a touring or gigging musician. The active part of being a musician was sort of cleaved away out of my life. And so other than rehearsing and writing new music, there was no progress in the musical front in my life during that time. Halfway through 2021, things had kind of opened up again, but then a bunch of my bandmates got sick, we had to cancel a planned return tour, things kind of shut down again, and unfortunately, you know, we'd built up considerable momentum in our career just prior to that. The tour of Europe in 2019, even though, as you'll read in the book, it was of questionable success, it led to a slew of positive reviews for our newest album at that time. We ended up selling through 2 pressings of it very quickly. We went on tour with Pallbearer for a week at the end of that year. That's one of my favorite bands, so that was like, it felt like a high point for the band at that time. And the tour that we had planned in March of 2020 would have taken us to Puerto Rico for the first time. I think we're planning on going back to Canada. We were going back across the whole East Coast, which is one of my favorite places to tour. We had some really good shows and fests lined up, but all that got canceled, and instead what happened was stagnation after that. After all of the momentum that we'd built up, it all just sort of fizzled out. And it was around that time in 2021 that the Nietzsche podcast started. And the rest is history. The podcast was another pastime initially that I took up in order to just sort of kill time before I could go be a musician again. It's kind of funny to think about now. I'd written some somewhat sketchy memoirs as a touring musician in the years before that. As I mentioned, you know, I say sketchy in that they were sketches, you know, basically just long first drafts. But in 2020, in 2021, I really got serious, mainly because I was just staying at home for most of the time. There was nothing else to do. The world had become very small. It felt like the whole existence I'd known had vanished, and nobody knew whether it was going to come back. And at the very least, I doubted that if it did come back, that it would be anything like it was before. I think I was mostly wrong about that, thankfully. But at the time, the future was uncertain. I didn't know if the band would stay together. We were already sort of getting on in years at the time. It was our 8th year of existence. And as I mentioned, we realized about halfway through that the loss of momentum was going to be devastating to us. And so I decided to write about what was, for all intents and purposes, my old life. It felt like my old life. It was such a strange time. And I resolved that I was going to write down everything. And so I did. At first, I tried to write it out chronologically. I still have that document, which I am more or less finished. It was a whole saga that ran to like 500 pages in Microsoft Word, single-spaced. I think it was like 500,000 words, if I recall correctly. But the last book of that saga, the last chapter, that was what became The Ritual Madness of Rock and Roll. At that time, that was sort of in its raw early form. But the funny thing is, even during that time, the whole rest of that sort of chronological saga of my whole tour memoirs, of everything that I had ever done with that band for the past 8 years, it was in that last book where I started to get philosophical. It sort of occurred naturally because at the time when we went on that tour, I really did start to pose those questions to myself, and my notebooks on tour are about half journals, and half of them are philosophical speculations, disquisitions, whatever you want to call them, just my philosophical, psychological ramblings. And so, I don't know, I guess that project kind of pulled those thoughts out of me again. And when I looked at my notebooks, I'd already begun writing along those lines while on tour. And so I decided to pull out that last section and make it into its own book. And I knew that I had to write it exactly when I was writing it, or else I probably wouldn't have been able to write it the way that I did. What I mean by that is I discovered something while writing all of my memories down. It didn't take me long before I reached certain points where I lost all recollection of what occurred on a given day, where sometimes the events of two tours from two totally different years would start to blur together. You know, like, wait, was that the first time we went to Atlanta or the third time? Stuff like that. Sometimes a memory that I associated with one place I'd later remember took place somewhere else, or somebody, a friend or a bandmate would correct me and say, no, that happened somewhere else. And I realized something that maybe is a truism. Memory is a slippery, uncertain, dissolute thing. It's not as if you make a memory and then file it in an archive where it holds a definite shape. A memory is something that your psyche acts upon and will even alter based on subsequent experience. It's not a reliable recounting of the past. And it becomes less and less so as the years go on. And so, you know, you could never hope to have like a perfect recollection, a perfect record of what happened. But this was the tour that was nearest to my memory at the time, right? It happened in 2019. Now it was 2020, less than a year before. And so that was my best chance, my best candidate to record a detailed travelogue of what happened. It was never going to get any clearer of a memory. It was never going to become any clearer of a memory, excuse me, than that. It would never be a fresher memory than that one was. And, you know, the next chance I would have for a fresher memory of tour would be the next time I would go on tour, and I had no idea when that would be. So I separated that last section from that unpublishable rambling manuscript of about 500 pages, and it became its own work, and it went through several different versions. And after 3 or 4 edits, a couple of them with the help of others, I tried to get it published. But I couldn't even get a literary agent at that time. And looking at some of the websites of, you know, indie publishers or literary agents or agencies, you know, they would even have messages on there like, due to the coronavirus, we don't have anyone in the office right now, and we're not even accepting new clients. I don't know if it was the timing. I don't know if, you know, it was just the fact that nobody knew who I was, and they would think, you know, who would care about reading about this guy's band or his philosophical ideas if, you know, you don't know if the audience for the book isn't going to know him as like a famous musician or a famous philosopher. you know, some guy in a no-name band with philosophical ideas that don't come from somebody with a degree in anything, right? And so, you know, I did have an indie publisher in San Antonio offered to print it, but I decided against it, and I'm not exactly sure why. Initially, my only thought was to get this book printed and just ensure its existence in some physical form, because it was very important to me once I had finished it. I didn't want to go out and market myself and become an author. That was really far from my mind. I just wanted to have this part of myself that was contained in this book, this snapshot of my life and ideas, incarnated into print, right? But it seemed like that wasn't in the cards to have it actually physically published. And so I just decided this isn't going to happen. It's not the time. And I sort of set that project aside. And maybe I'd revisit it when the time was right. Well, flash forward to last year when the time was right. After setting that book aside, I began the podcast. And, well, it's now worthwhile for a publisher to put out my book, a fact that I'm very happy about. And so that's how the book is related to the podcast. The podcast created this book, or maybe the demand for it. But the book dates from before the podcast. It predates it. And I think all of you who listen to the Nietzsche podcast and are fans of it will get something out of it because, you know, again, it's not a synthesis of Nietzsche's ideas. It's not specifically Nietzschean, but it discusses many of the same themes that we've covered over the course of the podcast. And it's a book about my life and the years immediately before the podcast's existence. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, how did you learn all this stuff about Nietzsche and philosophy? And I always say, well, I read books on tour and I wrote notes to myself about those books. Sometimes it was all I did for the whole tour. I did this in my personal life at home as well, but tour acted as a kind of intellectual or philosophical retreat in that regard. These ideas and insights that I had were formed while I was out doing this. And this is the last tour I did before a sort of an epoch ended, an era ended. And before I started the podcast, which was a new era in my life. In some sense, this book is like the backstory of the Nietzsche podcast, you could say. As for what that European tour was like, well, I mean, on some level, you just have to read the book because describing that tour is a bit difficult for me because it was so many things at once, so many contradictory things. It almost takes the whole book to really explain what it was like. I actually was struggling to find the words to describe it when thinking about putting together this announcement. So I went and found where I wrote in my book my whole justification for writing about that tour. It's in the epilogue to the book. You know, why did I write about this tour, not one of the 17 other tours I had been on? And what I wrote is, quote, "Why did I find this tour in particular to be so compelling when arguably I had encountered more outrageous events and perilous situations over the years touring in America than anything that happened in Europe? I eventually concluded that it was the confusing mix of emotions and experiences that made it the perfect tour to write about. In some ways, it was a high point for us, but from another perspective, it was a low point. It was disappointing and yet fulfilling. It was life-changing and yet ultimately of little consequence," end quote. I mean, perhaps that last line doesn't sell the book very well, but what I mean by that is that, you know, my band didn't go on to become one of the biggest doom metal bands of all time. In fact, we went on to mostly languish in obscurity as a kind of footnote on the 2010s and maybe the early 2020s of the genre. And so our story is tragic. And yet, those years were so magical. And they still feel magical to me in spite of all the adversity and the test, the challenge that those tours represented. It was a test on our patience, our friendship, our finances. It was not a glamorous or glorious time, but it was amazing in its own way. I've got another quote from the preface to the book, quote, "This is the story of a somewhat foolish endeavor, a doom metal band from Austin, Texas called Destroyer of Light hitting the road in Europe with an Italian band. We found ourselves moving from gig to gig at breakneck speed on an outing planned by people who didn't really know what they were doing. The experience was so punishing that I began to question why I was doing this in the first place. What exactly was it that I was pursuing in pursuing the musician's life? Why would I willingly do this to myself? What is the point of all the stress and privation? What is the point of being a musician at all? Familiar questions followed me through an unfamiliar land, but for the first time demanded an answer, and not merely a provisional one. All at once, we explored the upper limits of frustration and fulfillment. This tour was a mitigated disaster. It was one of the most exhilarating and frustrating events of my life. End quote. So if you want to know the background of the podcast and more about me as a person, more about my life, this book is that story. It's also my own philosophical investigation, drawing on Nietzsche and others. Anyone who has listened to the whole podcast up to this point, I think will get a lot out of this book, or at least hope my ideas could be a catalyst for others and posing some similar questions to themselves. What is art? What is its value? Why do we make art? Another reason why I think fans of the podcast should support the book when it comes out is that if this book is a huge success, it will ensure I'm able to put out more books. It will make it so that I have even more support going forward for future publications. And as the patrons know, I'm working on a book right now that is specifically about Nietzsche, which will likely be the next book I seek to publish. But first, we have to see how this one goes. As we move closer to the release date, I plan on reading a chapter as a teaser for the book, which will come out here through the podcast feed. The bigger thing is, now that Patreon has added the possibility of free memberships, you should definitely go to Patreon and follow me there as a free subscriber, and that way you're on my email list. This is the easiest way for me to set up an email list is through Patreon, because it's already all there for me, and now that you can sign up for free, there's no downside for you to do so. I promise I'm not going to send you spam, okay? It's just going to be, you'll receive updates through the email list, mainly about the book or, you know, things of that nature. Big announcements, important things, very, very occasionally. And that's just one of the many ways that you can support the channel, by the way. And the more of you who do that, the more likely that I'll have more time in the future to devote to writing books and making podcasts. So keep an eye out in May of this year for The Ritual Madness of Rock and Roll by yours truly, Keegan Keldsen, published by Black Rose Writing. It's a book 5 years in the making, and we went on that tour in May of 2019, so it's literally coming out to the month 5 years after the events described in the book, which is kind of surreal for me to think about. So in any case, it's been a long time coming. I have high hopes for it. I can't wait to share it with all of you. Thanks for listening to my advertisement for it. It's of course not shilling if it's your own brand. And go ahead and go to the Patreon, sign up as a free member, get on the email list. That would really help me out. And you know, if you just listen on Spotify, follow me on YouTube, and vice versa. If you just listen on YouTube, follow me on Spotify. All of those metrics, all of that really helps me out. So thank you, everyone. Thank you so much. Cheers. Signing off.